right, it's 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are listening to The Ooze with your host, Jason Sorrell. And looks like I'm going to be doing the hosting duties this evening all by myself. This time change thing has kind of caught me by surprise, so I know it caught Rotten Biohazard by surprise, probably, and folks weren't expecting The Ooze to be on basically an hour earlier than what was on, like, last week. It's still 10 p.m., 9 p.m. here. That's normally when we do the Tuesday show, so we will carry on just like we always do. Tonight we're supposed to be talking about homelessness and starvation, and I think this is a topic that actually Rotten Biohazard and I discussed several months ago, what we're going to say, some ideas we were kicking around when we were talking about what type of things we're going to be talking about on the Tuesday night show. And so I don't want to get too deep into it, I guess, with tonight's show, because unless Rotten shows up, then I will, we'll go ahead and talk about it, because I know this is kind of a topic that he has an opinion on, so I don't want to, monopolize the time discussing a topic that I know he wants to weigh in on. Suffice it to say that homelessness and starvation, my opinions, I'm kind of meandering back and forth on my opinions on the homeless issue. On the one hand, I think that homelessness is a choice. And it might be a foolish choice, it may be a bold choice. Regardless, it's a choice. But especially here in the United States, nobody has to really live homeless. I know that circumstances happen. I know that things happen. It's a shame that things happen. That in what is arguably, I admit, the strongest economic power in the world, the strongest economic power in the Western Hemisphere, however you want to describe it, we have people who can't find a place to sleep, that have nowhere to go, no shelters to go to. To one extent, there's a part of me, in my philosophy, that thinks, it's a matter of being able to do for yourself, having responsibility for yourself, making choices that, should you want to be in a home, and that's another thing, if you want to be in a home, then you make the choices to make sure that you have a home to go to, whatever it is, whether it's a tent, a hovel, a shitty apartment, a squat, or you own some place. And home ownership is a real funky thing in my mind. It's really kind of a weird concept, in most cultures, and we'll get into that, I'm sure. But in my opinion, homelessness is a choice, and it's a valid choice from where I stand. I know that some people are forced into it. I know that homelessness exists, and for a lot of people, the situation sucks, but it doesn't have to be that way. For a lot of people, I think the situation sucks because standards here in the United States are everybody needs to have a home. Rotten, is that you, man?
Yeah, it's me, man. Sorry about that, dude. Time on things at 11 o'clock, I'm sorry.
Right on. No, I don't know what happened there. It shouldn't have been 11 o'clock. It should have been 10 o'clock. And I think the time change kind of threw Blog Talk Radio off for a loop.
So we're talking about homelessness. We're talking about homelessness, scenarios in which to fix homelessness, and what are the issues with homelessness as it currently stands, correct?
Right. And we're going to get into, I guess, maybe starvation even, the general use of resources as a society. And what I was saying, kind of introducing the topic, is that I have a mixed opinion about homelessness. On the one hand, I see for most people that are homeless, especially here in Austin, Texas, where the homeless are here in droves because it's a warm climate. The people here are sympathetic to the homeless situation. Lots of people hand the money out the car windows to whoever's standing on a street corner. We cater to them here. Homelessness is a choice, and in my opinion, it could be a valid choice. It could be a valid lifestyle choice. And so part of the problem with homelessness isn't so much the actual being homeless as much as our perception as a society about being homeless, that, we have in our heads that everybody should have a home, everybody should have a place to live. When the reality of our species, I think the reality of our animal as an organism, is that this is a necessary, shelter is not defined in nature as, a tenement someplace with air conditioning and electricity and things like that. It's just our standards. We have the social pressure to conform to make sure that we all go back to our little boxes at the end of the evening after working in the slave pits or working on Pharaoh's pyramid or whatever. So there's that situation.
You know, I see
on
it.
The other hand, go ahead.
Go ahead, man. Finish up your little rant there.
I was going to say, on the other hand, while, you know, it's a choice, I also see, so it's every individual's responsibility whether or not they're homeless. But on the other hand, I look at, again, the abundance in our society. I consider that stat that I've mentioned several times that, you know, there are 24 vacant homes for every one homeless person in the United States. That is simply a matter of poorly allocated resources on our society's part. So on one hand, I'm very much like, you know what, it's the individual's responsibility. Then on the other hand, I'm kind of like, you know what, if we as a society could really step in and do things differently to make sure that, you know, people who wanted a home had a home. And I'm not sure where the connection is in that.
Okay, and I agree with you on some of the points that some people literally do choose homelessness. They'd rather be homeless than deal with whatever situation they're personally in at that time and place. But I also think that some people maybe do not choose it, whether it be due to drug addiction, whether it be even to mental illness, that they are simply unable to work, which also causes them to lose domicile that they possibly currently had before, you know, becoming homeless. So in a way, your ideology is right and it's wrong on, you know, those two levels there. But also,
well, sure. Go ahead.
Also, man, the homeless, man. Some of them down in Florida when I was down there, man. Some of them made damn good money panhandling. Well, let's get real, man. Those people can really pull in some serious cash them today, shit. And some of them even were doing it professionally. That they would go home at the end of the day with a beautiful house, and they would just put on dirty clothes every day and go out and panhandle. And they made good money doing it because societally we have this notion that they are to be treated kindly, that we're supposed to treat them as we would maybe treat a dog. I know it sounds a horrible thing to say, but we're supposed to feed them scraps, aka money, you know, that kind of thing, basically. We're supposed to take care of them, but not take care of them at the same time. We're supposed to give them money, but not give them a place to live or a place to stay. We're supposed to keep them on that level and not try to raise them up from their social status that they're currently in at that given point in time.
Having walked around Austin and having actually sat down and been among, you know, little groups of homeless people and, you know, not as a part, they definitely, you know, they tolerated my presence basically. I've heard them speak about how they prefer, at least these, you know, certain groups, I'm not saying that it's always this way, but how they prefer to be homeless rather than to have a job, rather than to have some place to maintain. Better to be homeless and off the grid than have to answer to some housing authority, to have to answer to keep your lawn mowed, that they think that that is, a lot of them think that that's, you know, an insane way to live. To address a couple of the points you made, as far as drug addiction is concerned, yeah, I could see that, where you are so addicted to drugs that you find yourself in a situation where you made all the wrong choices, your priority has been your drug habit. You haven't paid the rent. You haven't paid your bills. You find yourself out on the street, and there's where you're at. On the other side of it, though, if that is your lifestyle, if that is your choice, your priorities are your next fix, well, it's easier to get your next fix if you're living out on the streets amongst the addicts, amongst the dealers and pushers, than in a home where you can be found by the authorities, where you can be found by your family. It's easier to go out and do those things when you have no obligations, no pressures, nobody judging you because you're out among the people, you know, who do those things. So a drug addiction, in my opinion, is a choice. Sure, it's the result of a chain of choices.
Yeah.
You know, where you don't just boom find yourself addicted one day. There's a certain set of choices that were involved that led to your addiction. And as far as our society, we reach out to these people. There is, and let's face it, it may even predate Christianity, where there's always been this urge to buy, you know, different groups. It seems to be the high moral thing to do to reach out to the homeless, to give alms to the beggars.
Yeah, like those ugly puppies.
What's that?
Like those ugly puppies.
Right. Or it's the same mentality as feeding squirrels. When you feed squirrels, you just produce more squirrels. when you give money to the homeless, you just produce more homeless. You advocate their lifestyle by making it easy for them, by giving them, you know, the things that they're asking for, instead of making them go out and get it the way you get it. And frankly, if they can get you to do it, if they can play on people's sympathies, I mean, that's a job. That's a job. You know, 8 hours a day, you're out there on your corner or whatever. You've got to fight for your piece of property. You've got to, you know, keep the other homeless people off of, you know, out of your little territory and everything else, and you do your thing. I know the homeless people, I've seen it, you know, again, in my travels around here, I watched a couple of older homeless dudes approach a couple of younger guys who were also clearly homeless, but these guys, you know, these guys had backpacks and sleeping bags, where these older guys had nothing on them, right, just their clothes. And I walked up to him and said, like, hey, man, where are you from? What are you doing around here? Because we've been seeing you, you know, squatting on our corner, right? Basically, there was a territorial dispute. And the kids were like, well, we're just passing through and everything else. We just need a little bit of money. He's like, no, man, you don't do that here. This is our place. Okay? So, there's that weird thing going on where, yeah, they're homeless, but they still also claim their little areas of territory and everything. We have to, in order to sustain themselves. But what I was going to say about people giving to these people, but there's this, I mean, it's the good guy badge thing, I think. There are some people that genuinely think they're helping when they hand money, when they hand food or whatever, that they're doing the right thing. But I think for most people, frankly, it's a matter of, you know what, I'm going to do this because even if nobody sees me doing it, and the guy behind me in the car behind me sees me putting money out here, you know, when I do it, when I give to my, you know, church or when I give these different things, I show that I'm doing, you know, what needs to be done. But, you know, the hard work, which would be, you know, working in a soup kitchen, which would be drug addiction counseling, which would be going out into the field and actually talking to these people, finding out which one of them don't want to be homeless and want to actually take steps to get out of that situation, you don't do that. Because you gave your dollar that weekend to the guy on the corner of the street that you otherwise, if he walked up to you and asked you for the time, you wouldn't even fucking talk to him.
Even though, man, you have to admit, it's got to be quite difficult to write off, and when taxes are ready to be filed, it's pretty damn hard to write off, hey, I gave this hobo $100. I don't think the government believes you.
Right, right. And it's, I mean, for most people, though, that's not the point. I mean, there's always been. When you walk through the gates, when you walk through the gates of a walled city, you know, back in ancient times, you're walking through past the guards, you're walking past the merchants. And when you throw some alms down to the poor, you're sending a signal to all those people who are going to carry the message back that, hey, this stranger that just came to town, dumped a good chunk of change on our beggars. So this guy, you know, he's got a little bit of money. He's a little bit, you know, a higher class person. So, you know, treat this person well. You're buying yourself a little bit of affluence, if you will, through this display of charity.
And a little bit of security as well. You're basically buying your safety, at least for some of your journey through the city.
Sure, sure. The movie Hostel is a perfect example of that. Is that with the little kids. You know, this pack of children in Eastern Europe who, you know, they roam the streets and they're feral. They attack people. And the guy, you know, the protagonist in the movie, in order to escape his persecutors, gave the children a bag of chewing gum. And that bought their loyalty, for at least for the moment. And they turned on, you know, the locals, the people that were going after him. So absolutely. Now here, I know that here in Austin, when you give a homeless person a dollar, they get the money from you and they forget your face as soon as you hand them that cash. I've had people walk up to me and, you know, they're like, hey man, you know, sorry to bother you and everything, and I don't mean to intrude or anything like that, but you know, I'm kind of, you know, just new here, and I'm trying to get through town and everything else, and I haven't had anything to eat in a couple of days, and you know, he looks well fed for a guy who hasn't eaten in a couple of days, you know, his clothes are still kind of nice and everything, and he's like, I haven't eaten in a couple of days and everything, can I get a dollar from you? And I don't care any cash, dude, and he doesn't even, not even an okay, not even whatever, just turns and walks away. And that's,
wow.
I mean, that's the, I think, well, I think when you have that, when you've got that mentality, I mean, there's a certain thinking to this that, you know what, you don't have, if you're going to get told no, well, you don't have time to deal with this guy. You need to move on to the next guy. You're looking for a yes. You're looking for a dollar. you got to hustle.
At least I'd say thank you for your time, sir. You know, I'd be at least somewhat conscientious about it, you know?
All right, well, and as you pointed out, most, you know, a lot of them are, you know, not quite in their right mind.
Yeah.
At least, and when I say, well, you know, I should rephrase that. They're not in the right mind per the social standards that
okay.
you and I generally adhere to. Because I don't want to say, like you said, the mentally different. Okay. They have their own reality. They have their own way of doing things. So there's something to that, I think. There's something to that culture. And, again, you listen to some of them talk about how they wouldn't, you know, trade their homeless lifestyle for the world. They look at people – I mean, they look at us. They look at people that have, you know, regular jobs or whatever as, you know, especially the ones that do the 9-to-5 thing. You know, these people, they have to be someplace at a certain time. They're told when to get up in the morning. They're told where to be. They're told, you know, when to take their breaks, when to do whatever. They do whatever job there is they're doing for whatever little pittance they get. And then they turn around and, you know, head back home to whatever, you know, squalor they can afford, as nice as they can possibly make it. They watch a little bit of bullshit entertainment. They get concerned about things they don't need to be concerned about, like their appearance, their diet, their health. There's a liberating mentality, I think, amongst the homeless that makes it, in many ways, appealing. Now, on the other hand, you know, based on my standards, I don't want to be filthy. I don't want to be toothless. I don't want to be, you know, drug-addled or alcohol-addled all the time. I'd like to, my lifespan to extend beyond 50 years. There are benefits to catering to the social norm, and it's all a matter of, you know, personal choice. It's all a matter of you saying, you know, these are the things I want. This is what I'm going to go for. If I wanted that level of freedom, you know, absolutely, I could, you know, pack up whatever little shit that I needed from here and cut loose.
Let me ask you a question, man. We were talking about the housing ideas. First off,
mm-hmm.
Of course, you're definitely in Austin. So you're definitely in at least a major metropolitan area. You're in an area with nice subdivisions that I'm guessing have suffered a lot of foreclosures. Am I correct?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yes.
Let's just say that one of these, you know, nice, you know, beautiful, you know, divisions were completely empty, man. No one living there. Why not take the homeless, ship them to a place like that, let them fix it up, let them live there completely free of charge, have a worker from the state come in who, you know, the medical, also a little bit of, you know, head shrinking kind of deal going on, have them come in and at least supervise these people, just to make sure they're getting the care that they need while they're living there. That not only builds up the build up property values for the neighborhood, because you just wouldn't have to live there full time. They could live there for maybe 4 or 5 years, just to fix it back up, get the values back up, move them out someplace else, do the whole thing over again. The state can resell those homes. They can make their money back on the foreclosures. You have the aid workers going in. They're not only getting money for their time and services, but they're also being able to help these people, which makes them feel good, which is a great thing for them, of course, blah, 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 blah. But you're also getting basically this nice little change happening, and no one's being harmed, and everyone benefits.
Right on. I don't even think you even need to go that far, where it needs to be necessarily, there needs to be government oversight.
Well, why not, man? I mean, okay, see, I'm basically taking the reason for this kind of oversight. Dude, even talking about just a social worker going in who has medical training and a little, and kind of has a little bit of work in psychology. Just, you know, kind of gets people on more of an even keel, I suppose, for society standards.
No, I know what you're saying. And the question I have is, that issue right there, society standards. But we're talking about normalizing a group of people, and my question is it necessary to normalize them? Is it necessary? I mean, the fact of the matter is, these houses are empty anyways. They're, you know, the people that built them were paid, you know, by whoever to build them. So money's already been exchanged for the labor that went into building these homes. I think it used, you know, there was a time in the U.S. history where people were told, you know, pack your shit and go west, And if you went out and you approved a certain parcel of land, and you were able to establish in 1 year that you're growing crops on or whatever, that was your land. So there's almost no government intervention other than maybe somebody coming out to check out to make sure that you did what you said you're going to do and to deal with disputes. One of the things I was doing real quick was just doing a little calculation. If the average if the population of the United States is 300 million people, and the land mass is right around, it's a little bit more, this is not including water, this is just the land, is right around 3,500,000 square miles. That means for every person, if there's 300 million people in the United States, there's almost 86 miles of land, square miles of land, available for every one person. Okay? So we're talking about, delegation of resources. Now, you're going to have – it's a simplistic viewpoint. Of course, you're going to have people complaining that, my fucking 85 miles is desert. Or, my fucking 85 miles is in Alaska. It's the upper north part of Alaska. It sucks. Right, right. And it's – make deals, But it's like, if you wanted to, every person in the United States, homeless or not, could have almost 90 square miles of land to do with as they will. Okay, so there's not an abundance of resources. There's this abundance. And it's the thing is, we talk about these problems worldwide. The same thing is repeated over and over again in other countries, that there's more than enough, frankly, to go around. It's just that we have this, here in the United States, we have this weird conception of, you got to go out and work for it. You got to earn it. And there's some truth to that. But then the game's set against you because you have to earn it this way. You can't define the way it is you're going to earn it. There's strengths and weaknesses to our system. And one of those weaknesses is that people who don't want to play the game, they fall through the cracks. Then you end up with, homeless.
You definitely have a strange hierarchy in this country of upper echelon to the homeless. It's strange, strange hierarchy of how things are supposed to be done, what avenues to get to this stage, that stage, this stage, how it's set up, man. It kind of is, we could almost equate it to how India is with outcasts. We could equate that with homeless, of course. Things of that nature as well. It's absolutely mind-blowing that we as a country can't actually solve this. Of course, also the simple fact is we don't want to. We really don't give a damn about them. Come on now. The only thing that we really care about is that they're there. They are sucking on resources. We can complain about it later on when we're watching the news.
See, now the thing is, I think there is a concern about the homelessness, the homeless situation, the people who are homeless. Now, it's not the concern that means, we need to fix it, we need to do something about it. No, I think the concern with the homeless situation is you need that example out there as a stick to get people to go after the carrot. That if you
you're taking a morbid scapegoat mentality.
Right. Look at these people out on the street. If you don't play the game, this is where you could end up. If you don't play the game, this is what could be going on. And, then if you want to talk about, who knows, crime, whatever. Yeah, you could go, it's the homeless. Disease. Oh, it's the homeless. These people are out here doing this. Or, you need a reason to feel good about yourself. You need a reason to be distracted. We want you to concern yourself with these people here, the homeless, who a lot of them would like you to just leave them alone. If you're going to hand them money. Otherwise, leave them alone. They don't want to do your counseling trip. They don't want to be in your shelters. They don't want to deal with any of that shit. They just want to be doing what they do. They get along fine. And I'm sure that's what most of them would tell you. If I could just do my thing, get handed my little bit of money from whoever wants to give me the money and go get my fucking booze, go get my fucking fix and pass out in the woods or whatever, I'd be fine. If I didn't have somebody fucking with me, if I didn't have somebody telling me I can't sleep here, I can't be here, why the fuck not? It's the parks. It's because we don't want to see that shit. We don't want to admit that, human beings, as an animal, would prefer to be, a little bit doped up, a little bit, you know, I get a little bit of sex and sleep a lot. That's our mode. That's what a lot of us would prefer to do. We don't want to admit that. So when we look at these people that, you know, they're homeless and everything else, we see the worst of ourselves, basically. We see those people with priorities that we don't adhere to. And it's just, I mean, if you look at, to give an example, look at religion, look at Christianity, let's say. You know, not to badmouth Christianity, but, you know, look at any religion, any faith like Christianity, where, you know, part of their deal is convert them or kill them, destroy them. Part of their thing is like, well, I don't agree with that person. I've been taught to conform to these standards. And I look over there and I see somebody else that is suggesting there's another option based on their own behavior, based on the lifestyle. He's suggesting that not only is there another option, but my choices might be wrong. And I can't stand that shit. So I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to do something about it to take away his options and make him conform to my standards. Otherwise, I'm threatened.
Yeah, I see it all the time in religion, man. I mean, I don't know how many native cultures, let's even look at South America or the Amazon, that have been destroyed by Christian missionaries over the last couple hundred years, actually.
Right, and most of those people had a better mentality about the delegation, you know, the distribution of resources than we do. Because, you know, they recognize you were born, you know, into this world with nothing but who you were. And if you can't, I mean, it's yours. If you can carry it around, you can defend it. So there's no need for having some superstructure that you're going to live in. There's no need for any of that. You whatever you can pack up and carry with you, the tribes, you know, the nomadic tribes of the United States, the Bedouin tribes of the Middle East, that, you know, if it's, you can pack it up and carry it with you, it's yours. You can claim it. If you can defend it, it's yours. You can claim it. And it's worth having. If you can't defend it, it's probably not worth having. And then when you die, make sure you just give that shit to somebody else, or make sure it gets distributed amongst your tribe or whatever. And, you know, your wealth won't be measured in what it was you had. Your wealth would be measured in the stories that were told about you and the stories you were able to tell and, you know, the contribution you were able to give to, you know, the people around you. So it's our priorities are screwed up. So, you know, if our priorities were different, you pointed out in India, where, yeah, there are lots and lots of homeless people. There are lots and lots of these, you know, these people on the streets begging and everything else. But their culture, it's almost accepted and expected that these people, they are considered professionals. They are considered enlightened. They are expected that if they aren't there, the government will come out and ask people to be homeless, to be beggars, to fill that void. To have them out in the world is this example of enlightenment, this example of another option. And, I mean, lots of these people, in India in particular, you know, these are gurus. These people who are filthy and living in the streets and begging for alms or whatever, they are gurus who people come from around the world to seek out whatever knowledge they have. You know, some of them, the knowledge they have is how to part you from your alms, part you from whatever your rupees or whatever. But still,
yeah,
you know, lesson learned. A fool and his money are soon parted.
That is a very good skill to know, though. I mean, everyone, I think, should learn that skill at least once in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in the Army, it's not hard. That's the thing, because when I was in the Army, a buddy of mine, we were drinking sodas. We're in the motor pool, where a motor pool is a great big parking lot for tanks, and we're doing vehicle maintenance, and we wanted to get a soda. There's soda machines in the main mechanic bay. Neither of us had any change on us. So what do? We made it a contest. We went up and down our line, our squad, and asked everybody. Everybody that we weren't, you know, that it was still within reason to approach. So, you know, here I am, a PFC, a private, E3, and I'm asking platoon sergeants, staff sergeants, sergeants, corporals, specialists, and other privates, hey, man, you got any change? Okay? I only need like $1 for some soda, okay? But Jeremy and I both walked up to the soda machine with at least $10 worth of change.
Nice.
Each. Right, right, just because that's the way it works. Your people, you know, fuck it, here's some change. Yeah, no problem, right? And, you know, the thought process, you know, and when I need it, maybe you'll have it for me. But again, maybe not. If I don't give you the change, you're going to think I'm a tight ass, or what I'm saying to you is I can't afford it, and I don't want you to have that opinion of me. So even if I'm giving you what change I would have used to get a soda later, here it is, so you don't have a low opinion of me. So, yeah, if
you know, actually,
people walk
actually,
go ahead.
that actually speaks volumes of us as a people, that we are so worried about people's, you know, preconceived notions of us, that we would do
right.
anything to basically squash these notions people have of us. It's absolutely fucking mind-boggling.
Right, a lot of us are so wrapped up in our image, that you're absolutely right, that we're so concerned about what some stranger is going to think about us that we're willing to, I mean, you might be the most dead set against, you know, the homeless situation, and if the right homeless person walks up to you at the right moment, you know what I'm a sucker for, walk up to me and say, hey, I'm a veteran, okay? Yeah, I'll walk, you know, when we go out in and out of the grocery stores, the Girl Scouts get my attention, you know, because I like cookies. But then walking out of grocery stores, you know, you might be, hey, we're this church and everything else, and we're trying to raise money to help, you know, victims of child abuse and families and domestic trouble and everything else. Can you give us some money? No, fuck it, I don't have any money. We're here from the Shriners and everything else. We're trying to, you know, help burn victims and children who are burned and everything. Give a goddamn. Hey, we're from the hospital and everything. We got kids who got cancer and everything else. Their hair is falling out. Please, sir, I have no hair. No, fuck it. You're not getting money from me. Walk by and say, hey, we're raising money for the veterans. Here you go, man. And not just a dollar. Here's 20. You know, I've got my button. I got my thing. I keep waiting. There was an episode of King of the Hill where these kids were panhandling. And this is kind of a little bit off because we're, you know, it's talking about the homelessness situation and everything else. But like you said, panhandlers can make a good amount of money. So there's this episode of King of the Hill where Bobby runs into these teenagers who all they do all day is hang out at the mall and beg for change. Okay? And they have that here in Austin. Right. They have that here in Austin. This is a hip town, man. This is party central. So if you're a kid, you've got the hard edge look downtown and everything else. Hey, man, got any change and everything? I'm living the rock and roll lifestyle and everything. All right, here's some change, man, because I didn't make the choices you made. Now I wear a suit and I feel like an ass, so let me support you and what you're doing. And, you know, what he did was he bought a fucking T-shirt at Hot Topic, and that's as far as the rock and roll lifestyle he's gotten into. So yeah, I'm waiting for one of these chicks to walk up to me because, you know, they're not all, you know, scruffy looking and nasty and everything else. Some of them are, you know, young women. You know, they're out there, they're partying and everything else. They've got in their heads that they can bait for change, especially in the summer. And my thing is going to be, you know, walk up to me and go, hey, can I get a dollar from you? Yeah, show me your tits. Because when I get my dollar to chicks, they're dancing on poles. So do something for it. Yeah, and what I'm worried about is some other homeless dude's going to hear me, you know, say that, and he's going to flash me his chest, you know, it's like, or worse. But it'll be worth it.
I have to go back to our point you made, man. This whole thing about you and veterans over a little Susie with no fucking hair, man. Explain that thing to me, man. It's just because you were in the military, or is there something more than that, basically?
I was in the military, so there's the camaraderie of the Corps, that kind of thing. The other thing is being a veteran, being a disabled veteran. My disability, you wouldn't know it if you saw me, but being a disabled veteran, you know, I'm putting money back into my own pocket in a way. But having dealt with those hardships, having seen what those people like, so it would be like if I had had cancer. You know, well, then the cancer victims would get my attention. So self-serving in a way. If I had been a Girl Scout and had to make those cookies, whatever. If I had been, you know, so if that were the case, so having been a veteran, having served, and knowing that a lot of the, you know, veterans organizations around here, that the money, and, you know, as a matter of fact, when I think about this, the guy that I'm giving the money to when I walk out the door, he's got a military service cap, just like I have, that has his unit and everything else on what war he served in and all this other bullshit. And he's got a piece of paper that he printed off on a computer in a plastic, you know, paper protector. You know, he's got a table. I have no idea who this guy is. You know, he could have just pulled up off the street, set up his little booth, and started asking for money. You know, he might be working his way towards his rent or something. I have no idea. But yeah, it's not a matter of me thinking, oh, I'm going to do some veterans some good. It's a matter of me thinking that as a veteran, my camaraderie to the core, it's something that I want to do. So yeah, it's part of my it's part of, you know, the training, part of the lifestyle. But that's why.
I think within being a rational person, you can actually see that's a very skewed way of doing things, isn't it? That you are more worried about the veterans versus those Susie with no fucking hair and use her, you know, dolly hair for her own hair. You know, it's definitely a very skewed perception of things, isn't it?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah, I totally see that. That is, you know, it's the one little indulgence I give in that little bone in me that wants to wear that good guy badge, that little piece of me that wants to be charitable, you know, due to whatever, social programming, social pressure, whatever. That's the one excuse I can give myself. Yeah, I can give to veterans because I'm a veteran. The kid with the cancer, yeah, that kid will get help. Not my problem. That kind of thing. So it's fucked up. But it's the same kind of fucked up. You look at our society when there are homeless children. You have the animals. Animals get more attention from our society for people. They're more concerned about the welfare of animals than there are human beings. Some miniature owl with a mating radius of 300 miles, right? The industry gets stopped because this owl, if you go and build a building in within this radius, well, that owl might not fuck, and that'll be in the end of its species. It's in my opinion with that, and again, it points to our skewed priorities here in this country. So a lot of what we're talking about has nothing to do with negative standards. It has nothing to do with, you know, saying, you know, the homeless people are right or wrong or whatever. It all has to do with our priorities are screwed. As a society, we have these fucked up priorities, these illogical, contradictory priorities, which means that we would rather hand a couple of dollars to some homeless dude than give them a home when homes are in abundance. You know,
that's exactly why I asked you about the foreclosure rate in your area, considering you are, of course, a more of a warmer climate than here, for crying out loud. That, yeah, you can have more homeless population, which, with, of course, you also have a higher rate of foreclosures with, you know, being in a more of a larger area and that sort of thing regionally. So, of course, you could definitely give these people a home, but would they accept it?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Would they accept it? And we had a thing here where some organization, some homeless advocacy group, actually they were doing some sort of Meals on Wheels thing, and they raised a bunch of money. And what they did was they had a bunch of people, homeless people that they profiled. They found in shelters. They profiled them. They kind of, you know, did their little measurements, did their studies, made a determination as, you know, they had a panel that, you know, weighed it and, you know, fretted over it and everything else. And they decided that this one guy deserved to have a home. So they bought him they took the money they'd raised, they bought him a mobile home, they paid his bills for like a whole year, you know, utilities, everything else, he's got a place to live. So now he's got a residence, now he's got an address. So all he has to do is, you know, he says he wants to go out and get a job and everything else. He was in this place for maybe 3 months because he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle it. The stress of having this property, the stress of having to deal with it over there, he preferred to be homeless. So he's back out there. The foreclosure rate here in Austin, because we're expanding, our industry is on the increase. We're one of the few places in the country where we haven't really been hit by the negative economy. We're actually getting bigger and building here, which is a symptom of our screwed up priorities. Here in Austin, in downtown Austin, for a long time here in Austin, you couldn't build a building, I guess, taller than the UT Tower. University of Texas has a tower. There was a famous, you know, sniper that killed a bunch of people from off the tower in the 60s. Or you couldn't build a building taller than, I don't know what building it was, maybe the Cross Bank or something. I don't know what building it was, but you couldn't, or it might be even the Capitol building. I don't know. You just couldn't build a building to a certain height. The city elected to repeal that ordinance. So you had all these people come in, they started building these high rises. The intention for these high rises was to reduce the traffic issues we have in downtown, because there are a whole bunch of people that work downtown in office buildings and all the little support businesses, the cafes and the diners and the restaurants, that have to drive in from out of town because the cost of living here in Austin is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I priced a building, a house that was built in the 1940s. It's like a bungalow, 963 square feet, one bedroom. It's a nice little house in a nice part of town, $200,000. Back in Indiana, that same house would have been about maybe $60,000.
Yeah,
okay?
About that.
So the cost of living here in Austin, as far as you know, residences are concerned, is ridiculous. So the big talk from the city council was, we're going to build these sky rises, we're going to build these housing projects downtown, but they wanted to make sure that it wasn't some ghetto apartment. They wanted to make sure these were condos, basically. These were just opulent buildings, beautiful places to live. Okay, which means that all the people that were driving from San Marcos and Pflugerville and Georgetown and wherever the fuck they're driving from, all these little towns, are all satellite towns all around Austin, these people that are driving for 30-40 minutes a day to get into work couldn't afford to live there either, just like they couldn't afford to live in a house in Austin, which is why they don't live here in the first place. So the only people that could afford to live in these places were the executives and the upper management that was the industries they were trying to pull in to Austin anyways. So you just increase the population in Austin, you increase the amount of traffic, you still got a bunch of homeless people who don't have any fucking place to live. It's just ridiculous.
See, all that Austin was trying to do with that whole high-rise ideology was take and basically bring, as you said, more high rollers into town, get them staying there, get them living there, get them actually spending their money in Austin, Texas. So that way basically fills the coffers. They can basically say, oh, look, the economy's not hit us. Look how much people are buying here. Look at all the spending going on. Dude, that's basically cooking in the books. Come on now.
All right. Well, they're talking about these high-rises being sold out, okay? Well, the way these high-rises are sold out is that, like, Apple has property here. Dell has property here. Facebook's here. There's all kinds of businesses here, okay? Google, all these different kinds of businesses here. Well, what they do is they buy out whole banks of these luxury apartments, okay? So whole floors. They buy out the whole floor. Right, and then when they got some dude that's going to be staying in Austin doing some project, he lives in this high rise. He might be the only fucker on this floor, But that's what they're doing. That's how they ended up getting sold out. And the city council got their money. In the meantime, there are trailer parks where people have donated money to just make sure that homeless people with families have a place to live. That they're forcing these people to relocate. They're closing these trailer parks down because of whatever issues, drug labs or whatever, which is going to happen when you're dealing with the homeless. It's just going to be part of the thing. Here in Austin, we're a sanctuary city, which means if you're an immigrant from a foreign land and you're here in a quasi-legal fashion, well, we will take you in and we will shelter you and we will help you make your way to the world. By letting you be on the corners of certain streets and either try to find work as a day laborer and live. There's some woman that got busted for this. I wouldn't say busted. She found out she was renting a home to a one-bedroom home to like 27 dudes or 17 dudes all living in this one place in a one-bedroom home that the place smelled like a toilet. And not because, these are necessarily filthy people, but because it's that many bodies packed into that little space. And human beings are nasty, generally. So this is what's going – you're feeding these squirrels. Well, then you don't know you don't have a rational answer as to what to do with these squirrels when they all show up, when they're all around. And it's almost like you want to say there's this weird – field on the south end of town that whenever I drive by this place, there's always you can see into the woods these little camp circles, not campfires. They're not necessarily building fires out there, but these little circles of lawn chairs and wheelchairs and maybe a tent or two or whatever, and they're just far enough into the tree line that you actually have to be looking to see them. But everyone, you'll catch it. They'll have a red pup tent out there or whatever. And it's almost like this whole – it's almost like maybe – it's maybe like 3 or 4, maybe 5 acres. And I'm thinking, okay, is this the homeless encampment? Is this, you know, is this where they go? I know it's owned by like one of the local colleges or whatever. But it's almost like you want to set that up. You want to sit there and say, hey, there's this, you know, go here. It's the shanty town or whatever. If that's the way you want to live, and you go there, and you know the cops won't fuck with you here. That'll be the law as far as the city's concerned. Is if you're on this block and you're homeless, the cops won't fuck with you. You can be standing out there with a needle in your arm, and as long as you're within that area, you don't have to worry about the cops messing with you. On the other hand, you know it's the frontier there, so it's the law of the strongest. The strongest make the rules there. So you know you're taking your ass in your own hands, but. But it's almost like the kind of thing that needs to happen to address the homeless situation. It's like you don't have to have a house, but yeah.
But do you also see it as kind of you said you were driving, you happened to maybe notice one of these little shanty areas in the woods.
Uh-huh.
Do you see that as surreal at all? That sounds absolutely surreal to me. I don't even know why, but it really does. Kind of a little quasi creepy too, you know?
When I first saw it, I did. I was blown away. When I first got to Austin and saw people on the street corners, on every street corner, begging for money. The first one's like, oh, I've seen homeless people before, no big deal. The second one, the third one, the fourth one, they started to get, it's like, oh my, you know, what the hell is going on here? In fucking Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I admit, Fort Wayne's a small town, man, and I fully admit this. The closest thing we had to a homeless person was this guy with Tourette's. That would stand on the corner and just, you know, and just curse the shit out of everyone. But he wasn't necessarily begging for money. I did see one dude begging for money at the mall one time, and that was it. I mean, that was it. I ran into crazy people and homeless people in Europe. But again, not like here in Austin, not on every street corner. At the Bahnhof, in Hamburg at the Bahnhof, there was homeless people. And they were punk rock kids, you know, so... you know, easy to ignore. Being a punker myself, I just, you know, whatever, buddy. Do you have money for me? But yeah, it's kind of crazy. And then now that I think about it, it's almost like, you know what? It's an alternative lifestyle. It's almost like, man, I could give it a go. I could, you know, what would it take? What would it take to be live that way for a year? You know, what would be involved? What of my training could I actually use? What of my life experiences could I actually use to get there? What type of preparation would I need? So there's this mental exercise going on. And I know that no matter what, you know, what mental exercise I go through, the reality of it is going to be more harsh than I can ever plan for. But on the other hand, these dudes look pretty happy.
Let's take it from a rational point of view. First off, your girlfriend probably wouldn't fuck you after the first month of being out there. You ain't getting laid by her for a while. Your kids probably wouldn't look at you the same for quite a few years, man. Can you say therapy bills for a while? Like, you know, let's be real here.
Right. No. And there's that reality that if the issue is. Like, it's not uncommon in Europe for kids when they get out of, you know, school, basically, when they get out of, you know, their high school, when they go, you know, or getting out of college or before they go into college or before they go in the workforce, to take a year and backpack across Europe.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's not like it's hard to do. There's a dude, and we talked about this guy, there's a guy with a PhD who has been homeless for years. So it's just a matter of priorities and understanding what, you know, when we're talking about homelessness, it doesn't mean like a lot of these people, you know, I look at these people that are out there that are homeless and they're begging for money. They're doing it wrong. You know, in my opinion, that's not getting away from society. That's just being, you know, on the lowest, you know, mammary, basically. You know, you're on the dirtiest, filthiest tit. When you're that far down, and that's how you're getting your money, if that's how you're getting your sustenance. And I'm sure there are people, as a matter of fact, I know there are enclaves of people in the United States that are nomadic, that they do go from town to town, they do go from field to field, and they do their thing, you know, this gypsy lifestyle or whatever. They're living in vans, they're living in RVs, you know, motorcycles or whatever, and they – they have a weird situation with their kids. I know that I wouldn't – the thing that maybe really prevents me from doing it, you know, is that I wouldn't want to make those choices for my children.
Yeah.
That my children should have the opportunity to make those choices for themselves. You know, and if they do, they do. My girlfriend, I don't want to make that choice for my girlfriend. She doesn't want to make that choice. We like our creature comforts. But we talk about how, you know what, when at some point when the kids are all, you know, old enough to handle their own business, it might make sense to sell what we have and get an RV and live that way, you know, well before our retirement age, you know, when we're still young enough to enjoy it. It might be worthwhile. It might be worthwhile to say to hell with this and grab some backpacks and head out to Europe. Who knows? So, you know, these the people that we look at that, you know, I look at that are begging for money in the streets, these transients or whatever, it's almost like they're playing at being homeless. They're playing at having this different lifestyle. Because the bottom line is they want the money that other people earn to have some of the creature comforts that are important to them, you know, whether it's booze,
yeah,
whether it's, you know, the fast food, whatever. Versus, I mean, there are deer roaming our streets here in Austin, Texas. You know, a bow and arrow, a sharp knife, you know, could feed you for a week.
Yeah, if so, you do it right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, yeah, it's, I don't know. The biggest problem with homelessness, in my opinion, is not the homeless. It's not the state of being homeless. It's our attitude towards homelessness that we have this skewed perspective.
How do you even go to solve that, though? How can you actually rectify this social perception on a wide scale? I don't think you can.
Yeah, I don't think you can either, other than the situation becoming so pervasive that there's just no way to deny it. Where we finally reach a point, like let's say the culture in India, where the homeless are seen as just an aspect of our society, in some ways even a valued aspect of our society, and that we have them, you know, they're out there for doing what they're doing for a reason, and society supports that enclave of homeless people, where you know maybe it's you know some a young guy goes, you know what? Instead of going to college, instead of doing all this stuff, I'm going to go on a spiritual journey. So I'm going to go into the American Southwest, and I'm going to join a homeless enclave. And I'm going to beg for change, and I'm going to study under some dude that seems to know what he's talking about or whatever that I saw being featured on PBS. And that's what I'm going to do. So it's going to be, you know, changing. It's changing our attitudes. But I don't think, you know, it's homelessness, it's almost like I heard somebody talking about with Satanism. So how do you fix Satanism so that, you know, everybody's on board and everybody has the same idea? You don't. Satanism doesn't need to be fixed. The homeless situation, how do you fix the homeless situation? You don't. The homeless people, most of them are homeless by choice. What few people that aren't homeless by choice, you know, the one thing I could see doing is that maybe having laws where right now we've got laws that say, you know, you can't – your children can't be out on the streets, that if you leave your children out on the streets – it's child neglect, that your infirmed parents can't be out on the streets, that if you leave your infirmed parent on the streets, it's some sort of, you know, I don't know, whatever, elderly neglect or whatever.
Yeah.
Where basically the government comes in and says, okay, your name is Billy so-and-so and everything. Where are you from, Billy? You got family there? And then they find your family and go, they knock on your door, hey, we got Billy so-and-so here. He's digging through garbage cans and everything else. He's your uncle. Now he's your problem.
Nice.
Right. Right. And the thing was, and this is not so far off from the way our culture used to operate, that it used to be, it would have been considered a social shame to have a family member who could not be taken care of. So most families, they made sure that, you know, the retarded cousin, they kept him in a shack in the back of the house, but they made sure he dressed up for special occasions, and they made sure he got taken care of.
Yep.
Now, you had homeless people. You had transients and everything else like that. I mean, you had town drunks. But think about, you know, every place that had the town drunk, first of all, was drunk. He wasn't just a functional addict. He got wasted every day. Okay, he was so it's not like Poe, on opium and everything else, writing poetry, writing stories and everything, a functional addict. Most of the United States were all functional addicts until about the 1920s when, we started cracking down with prohibition and everything else.
Yeah.
Or maybe earlier than that. So, yeah. So we got about 3 minutes left. Anything else you want to say about this topic that we've kind of worn out?
We didn't even hit the whole starvation angle either, did we?
Yeah, we didn't even get to starvation. My answer for the starvation, eat the dead.
Yes.
Start with the dead. Go with if we run out of dead, start eating the rich. And if we run out of rich, then we eat the homeless. We'll solve that problem that way.
Or even abortion.
So,
I mean, fuck, you know.
Right. Yeah, free. We got long pig out there. Free range long pig. That's what the homeless will be. Oh, they're more environmentally sound. They're not being raised in their pens and everything else. They're out there in the wild, the way homeless people are supposed to be. They taste better that way. Yeah. Yeah, so that's how you solve starvation. It's a matter, and again, it's a matter of resource management. I have the same conflicting opinion. On the one hand, my opinion is you should be able to do for yourself. The problem is in our society, our priorities again are so skewed that you almost are trying to do yourself with one hand behind your back. You have to do for yourself through certain channels, and if you don't do it through certain channels, it's not right. You can't do it.
And during the wild hunt off season, you have to have a license to actually go out and kill an animal. It is absolutely screwed up.
Oh, no. Try going out in your backyard and digging up grubs and bugs and feeding those to your family.
Yeah.
Perfectly nutritious. There are cultures and countries all over the world that eat bugs and grubs as a regular part of their diet. There are cookbooks on how to cook and prepare these things. But if you try to do that shit to your family here in the United States, there will be problems. Yeah.
Yes, I would rather have you feed your kids, McDonald's, have them get fat, and then they bitch you because your kid is fat. Yeah.
Right. So we're about a minute left. I'm just going to go ahead and roll the outro, and we'll talk again next Tuesday.
All righty, man. Later.